All right, good morning, everybody. Once again, you are here with us at Community Watch and Comment here on WPFW 89.3 FM. I am Larry Stafford Jr., your co-host with Dave Rabin, and I'm so glad to be with everybody this Tuesday morning once again. It's great to be with y'all. We have had some crazy developments in the world and certainly in our state as well. We'll get into some of the things going on at the state and local level. And we'll have an exciting guest today as well, because, of course, everybody knows there were elections recently. Over the last few weeks, there were not only the federal elections at the presidential level, of course, but as we commonly do on this show, we are going to talk about some of the results at the local level, particularly in Prince George's County, Maryland, and what we can expect. And we have a special guest joining us, the recently elected Board of Education member for District 7 in Prince George's County, Dr. Felton Moss. And so we're going to talk to him in just a bit about his vision for education in Prince George's County and a bit about why he ran and what he sees as being needed in the school system. And we'll go into some headlines as well right now, actually. So thank you once again for joining, y'all. So, and as always, you've got the ability to call in to the show. If you are interested in joining in on the conversation, if you've got a take on some of the either local or national election results, you can call in at 202-588-0893. Again, that is 202-588-0893. So first, we're going to dive into some of the headlines coming out of the state of Maryland. So first up, Maryland lawmakers are staring down a $2.7 billion budget deficit for this year. This is news being reported out of Maryland Matters, as well as, I believe, the Washington Post. This is the biggest gap that the state has seen in the past 20 years. And for some context, even during the Great Recession, things weren't looking quite as bad for the state's budget. Now, this isn't necessarily a sky is falling moment, but it's definitely a sign that tough decisions are coming in this upcoming legislative session. If you've followed the show, and perhaps if you have also listened to our show that we did previously on Fridays, we've had quite a few conversations about the budget picture within the state. You know, we got to be real here that we can't let these decisions just fall on the backs of everyday working class Marylanders in our state. There is a lot of talk right now about cuts to many programs in the state, including cuts to some of the education investments that have been planned as well. But, you know, the real picture here is that for far too long in our state, of course, we have had the most wealthy and the most powerful corporations in the state getting off scot-free in many cases. And there's a lot of research demonstrating that, particularly multi-state and multinational corporations who reap the benefits of, you know, having their services offered here in Maryland and making a lot of money here in Maryland are not paying Maryland taxes, in some cases at all, and certainly not at the levels that they should be. So in order to meet our budget shortfalls, you know, we have to be vocal that this does not need to fall all on everyday Marylanders who rely on public transportation, who rely on our public school system, who need help in the form of with social services, the meager social services that are offered. If we're not careful, these are cuts that are going to fall on our backs So we need to be very vigilant in this upcoming session as they discuss the budget that's coming before them. In other news, in Prince George's County, Edmundston, the city of Edmundston is actually leading the way on expanding a democracy in their town. So they just approved a local voting rights for non-citizens and restored voting rights for returning citizens. So those come in from a previous stint of incarceration. So this is huge, especially as we see more communities challenging outdated restrictions and saying, hey, if you live here and you contribute to the community and care about what happens, you should have a say. So Edmundston is also joining cities like Greenbelt and Frederick, and I believe Hyattsville as well in this fight. And I got to say, it's inspiring to see Maryland paving the way on reforms such as this. Also, in other news, I want to cover something happening in Prince George's County as well. We have mentioned in the past on this show that the shuffle is on. So another outcome of the election that happened for the U.S. Senate, I think as many people know, the county executive for Prince George's County, Angela Alsobrooks, has won the election for the U.S. Senate seat. And as a result of that victory, there is going to be a shuffle for who will be the next county executive in Prince George's County. Today at the county council, it's my understanding, at least, that there will be a hearing on legislation that will determine how such an election will be conducted, if it is to be a special election. However, if the county executive, and this is my best understanding of the scenario that's playing out right now, if the county executive chooses to resign, I believe on or before December 2nd of this year, it will be an appointment process. And if she chooses to resign afterwards, there'll be a special election. So County Executive Alsobrooks has been very coy, if you could say that, about what particularly she will choose to do. It is ultimately up to her when she will resign from office. So we await her decision, but there are several candidates beginning to line up, including the current state's attorney, Aisha Braveboy, current council chair, and newly elected at-large member, Councilmember Jolene Ivey, as well as the current outlier at-large member, Councilmember Calvin Hawkins. And I'm sure there will be a number of candidates entering the race that perhaps I did not mention and that I'm not aware of right now, but these are the candidates that have been discussed in on the Washington Post, Fox 5, and everything of that matter. So we're going to have a shuffle here in Prince George's County. We could have a number of special elections even resulting for that. But an important note here I'll also mention is that these special elections will also be pretty costly. I believe it's, and I could be corrected if I'm reading this wrong, about like $4 million that will be paid for, you know, just administering the election at the at-large level. In Councilmember Ivey's District 5 seat that she is vacating, it'll be about $600,000. So also in the discussion today at the county council building, there'll be a conversation about increasing the minimum wage and perhaps indexing it to the cost of living. And there's been quite a bit of hand-wringing in the council chambers about whether or not that is feasible. One of the primary arguments against increasing the minimum wage here in Prince George's, or at least having it tied to the cost of living, has been, you know, the needs of certain disability service providers who employ folks who work at pretty low wages, and their income or their revenue is partly supplemented by funds from the state and the county. And so the fear is that increasing wages will result in bigger budget expenses for the county or the state in that case. And we're just here to say we're spending money on, you know, administering elections that are happening as a result of council members being indicted and as a result of certain folks, you know, having ambitions beyond their current seats, right? And we may need to spend for further special elections as a result of all those things. And this is, these are expenses in the millions of dollars here. So again, as you see these decisions being made at the local level, you hear some of these arguments being made, it's important to just recognize where the contradictions lie. It's okay to spend millions of dollars for special elections because somebody wants to be ambitious, but when it comes to paying disability service providers a bit more or making sure that they have the funding, you know, we act like we suddenly don't have the money. So, all right, so we'll keep everyone in the loop about the shuffle that is going to transpire around the vacant seat for the county executive. And we should know any day now what her decision will be and how many elections we're going to have in Prince George's County. And so closing this out and then just bringing us into our guest in just a moment, we'll go on a break for a bit and then we'll bring our guest in. But there were other election victories, of course, on the down ballot. As many know, question one, ballot initiative enshrining reproductive rights in the state's constitution passed overwhelmingly. We already mentioned County Executive Alsa Brooks leaving her seat and winning the U.S. Senate seat. And then, of course, we've got some Board of Education races on the down ballot. And we'll be speaking with one of the candidates, Dr. Felton Moss, in just a moment. So Dr. Moss is one of several candidates who were part of a clean sweep of all but one incumbent in Prince George's County's Board of Education. So it seems like voters in Prince George's County have been pretty fed up with the state of our education system here in the county. And they elected to have new representation and in District 5, particularly District 8 and District 7 that Dr. Felton Moss represents. So in just a moment, we'll hear from Dr. Felton Moss, who's a part of that new wave of Board of Education members coming in with a common vision. And we'll hear a bit about that vision right after a very brief break.
Met a woman who's becoming a star. She was very beautiful, leaving people in awe. Singing songs, Lena Horne, but the younger version. Hung with the wrong person, got a strong on that heroin. Cocaine, sniffing up drugs, all in the nose. Could have died so young, now looks ugly and old. No fun, because now when she reaches...
All right, so that song seems appropriate as we bring on our guest, Dr. Felton Moss, the newly elected or soon to be in office representative for Board of Education District 7 in Prince George's County. And I'll just let you introduce yourself and your amazing background, which I know a fair amount about, but I think you'll do a much better job of introducing yourself to our listeners. But yes, please introduce yourself to the listeners. And again, by the way, you can call in to join in on the conversation at 202-588-0893. 202-588-0893. All right, Dr. Felton Moss, tell everybody who you are.
Hey, Larry, it's good to be here with you and excited to be on the show. I'm Felton Moss. I'm a former high school English teacher, two-time teacher of the year, and I was a middle school principal, led a school from failing to successful down in Mississippi. And I currently serve as a college professor now. I originally moved here to work just at American University, but also got a chance to work for Congress and led education policy for the ranking member. And now I'm a tenure track professor of education policy and leadership in the Douglas Wilder School of Government down at VCU. I live here in Prince George's County in Suitland, Maryland. Just excited to be here and talk a little bit about our school board term that's coming up over the next 4 years. And again, thanks for having me, Larry.
Yeah, I'm glad to have you also. So could you share with the WPFW audience, like, what particularly motivated you to run for the Board of Education? Was it something that you saw in terms of what was lacking in the school system or our current representation on the Board of Education?
Yeah, you know, fundamentally, what got me to the school board was when I bought a house here in Suitland. One of the first articles I saw was an article about school not being able to start because we didn't have enough classroom teachers, and that would adversely impact students who lived in the southern parts of the county. And so that raised immediate concerns with me as someone who's done this work at the local level, at the state level, and the federal level, thinking about how do we ensure students have access to highly competent and overly amazing good teachers to provide high quality teaching and learning. And so that's when I started my journey of trying to understand what was happening in Prince George's County with regard to the quality of education. And so that compounded with the fact that our school board doesn't have representation of someone who's actually been a classroom principal on the board. And at the time, we had 9 school board members, only 4 of them had actually been classroom educators. And I thought many of the issues that we face would be solvable with someone who actually has direct education experience. Unfortunately, in many of the measures that matter to us around students being able to read, students being able to compute and do mathematics, we are competing with Baltimore City to be last or next to last in that regard. And so I thought it would make sense. It thought it would make sense at this juncture that we have folks on the school board who've actually taught classes, who've actually gotten results with young people, who've actually improved schools. And my opponent was not that person. So I decided to run for school board for that precise reason.
Yeah, so I understand that your opponent was some sort of rocket scientist or project manager. I don't know what he does at NASA particularly, but I believe now he'll have a lot of time to focus on that, perhaps. So you were the winner in this race, and it seems like you're coming in with a number of new Board of Education members. You know, like, could you say there is like a common vision that you perhaps share with some others for what you want to see accomplished in the school system?
You know, I think what I'm so excited about is that my colleagues, who there are many of my colleagues on the board who already have direct education experience. But what the county has elected are a group of folks who have done the work. We won't be learning about how to move student achievement. We'll be able to partner directly with the administration, our teachers, our families, to think strategically from a policy perspective around what it means to provide kids in Prince George's County with a high quality education. So I love the vantage point of this team. You've got folks who are aligned on some key issues around making sure we deliver on a commitment to equity. This group of folks understands what it means to lean into what Mayor Church Terrell says so eloquently, that if we're going to climb, we've got to lift other folks up with us. And so that excites me about this team of board members that are coming on, who've already rolled up their sleeves and gone to work, whether that's been a classroom educator, whether that's worked as a consultant. This group of folks that we've elected have spent portions of their life, tremendous portions of their life, working to deliver for young people. And I think that makes a difference, that we're not learning the importance of reading and math. What we're being is a strategic partner with our school district, our families, and our district leadership.
Sounds great. I mean, it sounds badly needed to be able to, you know, focus and have a board of education that can focus in on the details when it comes to education policy. And I wanted to remind our listeners, if you'd like to join in on this conversation with any questions or comments for Dr. Moss, who will be a new member of the Prince George's County Board of Education, you can call in at 202-588-0893 for those comments or questions. So, you know, given this victory here, you know, what would you say to some of the folks who are concerned? I've heard a lot of concerns from, you know, people in the community about, you know, like the efforts by the federal government to either defund the Department of Education or completely abolish it, or potentially, you know, enact punishments for schools and educators that teach about things like Black history. I mean, where do you kind of stand on that? What do you think is going to happen with this new federal environment?
Yeah, no. So I thank you, Larry, for this question. You know, one of the things I want to name, you know, outright is, you know, I worked federally with the House Ed and Labor Committee. And so the first tension is, I think this is a bunch of much ado about nothing, in that, you know, we didn't get a U.S. Department of Education until 1979. And there have been attempts by the Republican Party to abolish it since its inception, as early as Reagan, shortly afterwards, and now as late as Donald Trump. Even in 2023, there was an attempt by Republicans in the House to tag an amendment to the Parents' Bill of Rights, which is, I think, what you're talking about, which actually lays out these punishments that you've outlined, what parents can and can't. They've listed it as a set of Parents' Bill of Rights, when really it's a takeover of our school systems. But when they passed that bill in the House, they tried to pass an amendment that would abolish the U.S. Department of Education. 60 House Republicans joined Democrats and voted against the measure. And it takes congressional approval to be able to abolish the U.S. Department of Education. So I think Trump and friends and company have a great deal of work to do to be able to do that. But in terms of what's going to happen and trying to punish us, I think there will be attempts from the Office of Civil Rights. This will be the first time we see the U.S. Department of Education reverse civil rights in the way is the way in which I describe it, in that what that office has traditionally done was tried to create equity, tried to create opportunity so all children can see themselves, you know, have experiences that are validating for them. I think in the Trump administration, we'll see a very different Office of Civil Rights. What does that mean for local boards, though? We'll need to be on the front lines of that. I think we will need to advance, you know, we'll need to advance policies with our state actors. At the end of the day, you know, Trump says it best. The 10th Amendment, you know, delegates powers to the state that have not been expressed by the federal constitution. And so I think board members will need to stand up, working with our state partners to protect the honest and accurate teaching of Black history, to make sure our kids feel safe in our schools. So just like our governors are suiting up at the state level, our boards are going to have to suit up. You know, to be quite honest, prior to us having federal oversight, it was school boards who were making decisions about kids. We didn't agree with those because it was dating back to Brown versus Board of Ed. Yeah. But I think we really have to suit up at the board level, Larry, and be prepared to fight against this. And then codify in our own board policies where we stand on these issues around diversity, equity, and inclusion and access.
Yeah. Are you worried about, I know, you know, local school systems receive, you know, quite a bit of funding from the federal government. Is there anything that you're hearing about, you know, that funding being at risk?
You know, I would like the federal government to offer more than 10% of the money that district spends, but the federal share that local school district gets is only 10%, and much of that is caught up in Title I and special education. And I want to name that there is a commitment from the Republican Party to defund Title I.
Really?
One, they don't appreciate the way the funding formula is laid out, but Project 25 clearly lays out that we need to defund it. And then last year, Republicans fought pretty hard. A year ago when Democrats were in charge, Republicans fought hard to defund Title One. When President Biden put forth his budget request this past year, Republicans put out something that was drastically lower. And then special education, which is a big one, we haven't fully funded it yet. Republicans haven't gone on base around it because I think they found it largely unpopular to do so. But Title I is in jeopardy under this Republican administration. And so you started this show talking about state dollars being down. We'll really have some tough decisions to make if Trump and friends have their way with Title I, which is about Title I was created to make up for what the states could not do to make sure under-resourced, underserved students, had the access they needed to a quality education.
Yeah, what is their reasoning behind wanting to, move funding from something like that, like for just underserved, special education students? Like, why are they interested in taking away money for that?
I mean, it boils down to, you also see in the Trump plan a national movement towards vouchers and the privatization of education. And so I think what you're finding is they're looking for dollars and cents to be able to do that. They've tested this out a good bit. You know, many of these Republicans say, the best way to ensure under-resourced and students who've been underserved get a better education is through a voucher system. Give their parents the dollars and let them decide where they want to go. And so they very much see Title I as a program where we can remove dollars from it and focus on national vouchers. So parents can have more choice. I think that's precisely why they want to get rid of it.
Got it. Well, one of the last questions I have for you, I'm very thankful for your time here with us today and just taking these questions. And once again, to our listeners, if you would like to get in on the conversation talk to Dr. Moss before he has to go, you can call in at 202-588-0893. I just want to remind anybody who wants to call in, you can get in on the conversation that way, 202-588-0893. So I want to switch gears a bit to the topic of public safety within the schools. This is another area that I know listeners I've heard from in the past and community members have been very concerned about, just sometimes the violence that's going on in schools and quite a few parents don't feel safe in certain schools. So what particularly are your thoughts on the issues of safety in Prince George's County Public Schools and how we can ease some of those people's concerns?
Yeah, I think this, as someone who's been an educator, former teacher, middle school principal, I think we've got to make sure all of our actors are safe. That's including our teachers, our bus drivers, as well as our students. And so I think we have a great deal of work to do from a safety perspective. I think the district has started to move the needle around safety a good bit, but we still have schools that, do not have full-time resource officers. I've got my thoughts on how we should deploy those in such a way where we're not adding to the school to prison pipeline and that they're supporting, they're providing, safety trainings for young folks and in that way. But, we still don't have crossing guards and some of our most populated areas where kids are actually walking home every day. So all the way down to that level, all the way to the fact we've still got kids who are bringing weapons to school or we see, issues on buses and whatnot. And so, I think we need to comprehensively understand where we are from a safety perspective, but we've got to also partner with our students and our parents to get them to understand best practices in safety. We've got to also invest in mental health services to make sure we're appropriately identifying when students are depressed or when they're going through something that might lead them to some form of violence. We've got to be clear about that. But ultimately, one perspective that I continue to say that even board members should be advocating around is, we've got to get these weapons off the streets so that they don't get into the hands of our young folks. And so we've got to have both state and federal policy that's aimed at doing that. But I really think that
All the actors in the county have to come together. You know, our school violence issues are not just the responsibility of the district. We've got violence in the county. And so we've got to bring our heads together and do all of this good work together to provide for a safe community. I think that's the starting place. But we've got some equity concerns at the district level that need to be addressed. Some schools have access to certain safety protocols and procedures and persons and resources, and others don't. And so fundamentally, we've got to start there.
So Dr. Moss, I don't know if you've got time. It looks like we have one caller. Do you have time to hear from one of our callers here?
Absolutely.
Oh, we've actually got two callers on the line. So come on, step right on up to your phone. You're on the air for Community Watch and Comment with Larry Stafford and Dr. Felton Moss. What is your comment or question? And where are you calling from? What's your name and where are you calling from, too?
My name is Yolanda, and I'm calling from Maryland. I'm in the Capitol Heights area. And
okay,
I wanted to first say congratulations to Dr. Moss on the win. We always need strong people there to support our children and the curriculum that governs our children. I wanted to say over the years, I've seen where we need to put something in place that supports the parent and the child outside of the school hours, because that's where we lose most of our children. And the other thing I wanted to say was, have all the great minds in all the states that are facing this threat against the educational system, got together, if y'all could get together and do a conference together and come up with a strategic plan to attack this Project 2025 at the same time, and everybody is on the same mindset and the same accord. That's my statement.
Thank you so much. All right. Dr. Moss, you want to respond to that? Or
yeah, no.
I'll hear from our other caller first.
Well, I do want to respond. So one, thank you for your congratulatory message. And I want to speak to your concern around building a system of supports for after school. I mean, that's the second item on my platform, is that, you know, it was an after school program that actually saved my life, that kept me from getting into gang violence where I grew up and things of the like, because I attended an after school program and had folks who had enough vision to be able to do that. One of the things I'm really excited about in the county is that we have pockets of hope when it comes to after school programs. But, you know, through policy and advocacy to our local district, you'll see me, you know, advocate for a system of supports where we're coordinating all these after school services to ensure that we're able to make sure every kid has access to after school programs. I think there is a way for us to begin coordinating these efforts in a way that systematically makes sure every child has a safe place to go, and to get kids off the street after hours. I live in my neighborhood. We had 20 car break-ins 2 months ago. They were all between the hours of 4 and 7, which is when kids were just getting.
Hey, Dr. Mosa, I think you got cut off for a second.
Yeah, I just said, I think she has a legitimate concern that, you know, I shared as well. I think we need to build an after school system where that's coordinated, you know, at the district level with all these actors, because we do have after school programs in the county. It's just a patchwork. And so how do we work together with all these stakeholders to build some uniformity so that we can create access for young people? I was on a call last night with College Track, that's over in Suitland. They've got 75 seats, but they're not all filled, which is a great place for 9th through 12th grade students who are college bound. And so that's the kind of coordination I think, you know, you'll see me pushing and advocating for our district leadership to do to make sure kids have after school programs.
All right. And I think we have one more caller. Are they still on the line? Okay. Yeah. Just your name, where are you calling from? What is your comment or question?
Yes. My comment or question, calling from DC, is two pronged, I suppose. One, if the doctor could explain and break down the recent trend over the last decade or so of toward charter schools, what that objective was supposed to achieve, everything from uniforms and other emblematic approaches that mimicked, I guess, parochial education in past decades. And number two, how the behavioral learning approach has affected the outcomes of student performance, you know, in the last, say, 15 or 20 years, particularly the trend toward charter schools. I really never was able to get a specific definition on why and wherefore of charter schooling.
Yeah, I think you ask a really great question. So, you know, charters came about because Milton Friedman wrote a report decades ago that talked about the need for, which was an economist, who talked about the best way to provide a high quality education is the parents' choice in the system. The other reason why, you know, charters have come about is because, quite honestly, you know, families were not happy with their public option. And charters are public. Some charters are public schools. So let me name that too. All charters are private schools. But this movement of choice came about because of a feeling of disenfranchisement from the local system. And many parents begged for another option. Now, I'll say one other part on this. I grew up in rural Mississippi. And when you move to a voucher system, it has also been about white families being able to use, you know, state and local dollars to be able to fund private education for their own children. And so that's a reality too. I don't think there's a monolithic answer into why charters are growing everywhere. Even in Louisiana, you saw after Hurricane Katrina, every school in the city is charter. But overwhelmingly, there are all kinds of reasons why on the table. But fundamentally, we have to ask ourselves the question, if folks are looking for another option other than the public model that has stood up over time, then what is actually happening in our system? And so that's the question I continue to ask. For me, I tell folks, I just want kids to go to an amazing school that teaches them how to read, that affirms their racial identity, and gives them an amazing education. But we've got to figure out why folks are abandoning it. And we know why folks are abandoning our systems. But I hope that gives you an explanation for how we got there. Yeah. I don't know that I have all the resources to answer your second question, though.
Yeah, so, I think we got to move on because of time, but thank you so much for your call and your comment there. My last question to leave with Dr. Moss is, so I also noticed that, you know, you've won by a pretty healthy margin, but your opponent has not conceded yet, at least publicly, on any of his platforms, on social media. And I saw that there was a petition launched by a community member calling for him to concede. Have you heard from Dr. Harris about a concession? What is your understanding of what's going on there?
You know, when I was growing up, Larry, my grandmother told me that if you mind your business 100% of the time, you don't mind others 100% of the time, you'll be doing fine. I've tried to do that. I have not spoken with Dr. Session. I don't know why he has not, or if he plans to, for that matter. I'm staying focused on preparing to make sure on day one, which is December 2nd, we are there to fight on behalf of the children who need us most. And so I don't know what Mr. Harris will do, but I'm preparing for December 2nd and then our first board meeting December 5th, as the voters have shared and the voters have voted and have said they wanted me as their school board member. So I'm doing everything in my power to prepare to do exactly what they've tasked me to do, and that's deliver results for young people.
Absolutely, and that makes perfect sense. So just hope that we don't have a storm Sasser, storm the school board kind of thing, like a January 6th locally, just the way that this gentleman has behaved. But community members are watching, apparently, with that petition. So all the best. Well, thank you, Dr. Moss, so much for your time and sharing with us your vision. We wish you the best of luck in what you're pursuing.
Thank you, sir. Good to have you. And I'm happy to come back anytime you need me.
All right. Well, now we'll go on a quick break and then we'll come right back and begin closing out our show. Okay, so welcome back to Community Watch and Comment with your host here today, the co-host of this program, Larry Stafford Jr. Thank you once again for listening. So we just had our conversation with Dr. Felton Moss, who is the newly elected representative to the Board of Education in District 7, sharing his vision for Prince George's County's school system here, and we'll keep up to date with what's going on with the public schools in Prince George's County, as we always try to do here on Community Watch and Comment. And we'll see what progress, you know, he and others are able to make. Before we wrap our show, just wanted to close with some other headlines and some upcoming events as well. So there, as many people know, with this election of Donald Trump coming into the White House, there's quite a bit of concern from, you know, those who care about our undocumented friends and neighbors and sometimes even family members, and what they could be facing next year as President-elect Donald Trump has continued to proclaim his commitment to mass deportation effort in this country. So that's a big concern for many people in the country right now, and definitely in our region, where we have over 300,000 undocumented people living on just in Maryland, actually. And I know there's been a lot of political dialogue and rhetoric, certainly, you know, attacking those who are in this country, many of which just trying to survive and fleeing from, you know, untold violence in their home countries and looking for a better life. And so wanted to share that groups like Casa de Maryland and some other legal actors are beginning to prepare for this. And they're filing many legal actions to safeguard immigrant rights before the election. So just a reminder to folks, I think many folks should look into talking to an immigration attorney or connecting with groups like CASA for direction on either how to protect yourselves or some people that you care about. I was on a drive last night in a cab coming from the airport, and my driver was somebody who shared with me that they're on a temporary protective status. So even folks who were legally granted permission to come here are, you know, facing a lot of uncertainty right now. And I just want to remind folks of that. And he says he doesn't know where he will go. He actually is somebody who came from Sudan during a time of great, you know, war and strife in his home country. And he does not want to go back, and he does not feel that he's able to, and he doesn't know where else he would be able to go. And so that's a lot of the very real life consequences of this election. And so my only ask for folks is to look out for those in our community who could be quite a bit more vulnerable now after these federal election results. So that's what I just wanted to share for a moment. And then we've got some upcoming events in the community. I'll share a few of those that I got in. There will be an event at the Goethe Institute. I think that's how you pronounce that, in Washington, D.C. They're hosting Colonialism and Its Impact on Political Solidarity today. That is going to be Friday, November 22nd, 2024 at 6 o'clock p.m. at the Goethe Institute in Washington. And I don't see an address particularly for that, but if you can look that up online, that's going to be Friday at 6 p.m. Colonialism and Its Impact on Political Solidarity today. Next, The New Republic presents The Best Political Night in D.C. There's going to be an evening of political discourse and networking on Wednesday, November 20th, 2024, 7 p.m. at Blackfin, D.C. So you can look forward to that. Other events coming up: the National Council of 100 Black Women, Northern Virginia chapter, is hosting their 30th annual advocacy forum. This will be a forum addressing advocacy strategies and community issues. And this will be on Saturday, November 23rd at 10 a.m. at the Hilton in Springfield, Virginia. And then lastly, also in Virginia, there's going to be a 15th annual Virginia Immigrant Advocate Summit, a summit focusing on immigrant rights and policy discussions, and quite timely, you know, with what we have coming ahead of us, you know, next year. That is actually going to be Friday, December 6, 2024 at 8:30 a.m. The location will be at the Annandale United Methodist Church. If you're looking for any more details on any of these events, you can always contact me at larry@progressivemaryland.org. larry@progressivemaryland.org. And the Maryland is completely spelled out, not MD, just so folks know. And yeah, if you have any other things that you'd like to hear on the show, you can email me at that address as well. And I just want to say thank you to everybody for listening. Again, we're always appreciative of our listener community who fund this work and make sure that local news like this is possible to be heard. So once again, I'm Larry Stafford Jr. This is Community Watch and Comment. We'll see you again right around this time again next week.
From the homies, you wanna take their word 'cause they know me.
They know me, they know.
They say I don't act like this usually, yeah. And I'm just having fun in the moment. And you've been asking around for intrigue, but the answers you get don't defend me. You shouldn't play with ifs and babies.
When you're around, baby, I can't breathe.
Who listen to things that they've been mentioning?
Come to me and I can feel you in.
'Cause you can't
lie on all the things they tell you.
They tell.
They don't know what I don't say.
How can they know it?
You
both know that.
We both know it ain't their place.
And you know you can always reach me.
Say
I'm right here.
You just love yourself to see.
Tell me you can see it.
I'm not about to have no fear.
So when you want the pieces to the puzzle, baby, I can make it clear.